For my satisfaction to appreciate one of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, Sanatana Goswami, who was respected amongst the Goswamis as the senior most or eldest amongst the six Goswamis, and certainly a great inspiration for all of them, and in turn for all of the followers of Lord Chaitanya. And secondly, to appreciate how Srila Prabhupada's teachings to us are in perfect fidelity with the previous acharyas. Although Prabhupada made the understandings of the previous acharyas so simple, like tablet, just put on a spoon and swallow, don't even have to chew. Just so smooth and delectable. But as we were going along in Srimad Bhagavatam, it was getting higher and higher and higher and out of sight. And so I thought that best to get back to, you know, basics. So at the turn of this year, I thought, press the reset button, go back to the lotus feet of Krishna. And so I thought I would consecutively try to cover this year. I'm not going to make it, but the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And that's what this year's retreat is going to be continuing. I've gotten as far as midway through the fifth chapter of the second canto. And I'm going to skip a little bit for the purpose of this retreat, because some parts of the fifth canto and the early parts of the fifth chapter and the early parts of the sixth chapter, everyone would be fast asleep by the end of the class. It's very technical. It's very important because it's Srimad Bhagavatam subject matter, but it gets into a degree of technical explanation that, well, we have a few technical people in the audience here, but I think we would lose. So I'm just going to, at another time, when the audience is a little different than this, I'll make up for those parts that I didn't complete. But I'm hoping that by the end of the second canto, there are classes that one can listen to that will be like study material. When you get to second canto, you can just, along with the study material, along with the Bhagavatam itself, Gaurijan Prabhu, very dear godbrother, has taken up as his service to our society a systematic study of the Srimad Bhagavatam, as he did with Bhakti Shastri material. So he has been very kind, and before it's published, he gave me copies, electronic copies, that I can't share with any of you. So don't ask me. But he'll publish it when he's, you know, he's very meticulous. Anyway, so when you get to second canto, there'll be Bhagavatam, there'll be Gaurijan's book, and hopefully those who are the recorders of this information, there'll be material to listen to. You can really dive deeply into the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So what I'm going to do for the next 3 minutes or 4 minutes is just give a really fast flyover into where we are now in the sixth chapter. The first three chapters of the second canto are as in the first canto, the components of the qualified speaker and the qualified listener. In order to receive the knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam, you have to have a qualified speaker. You have to have a qualified listener. These two are perfected in Shukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Parikshit. So there are wonderful exchanges between the two that help us understand their unique qualification. Shukadeva Goswami has received a question from the end of the first canto. Two questions. What is the duty of people in general, and specifically for a person like me who just got notice that we're going to die? What's the duty when one is about to die? And what is that subject matter that one should hear, chant, and remember? Those of you who know the first canto, Chintanti Kobi Das Tasya, that verse. Shrotavya Kirti Tavya Shavyaya Pujas Chanityada. This is a phrase, it's a refrain. It comes again in the second canto, several times in the second canto. The process of devotional service is made up of nine, and hearing, chanting, remembering, worshipping are four of those nine. So the process of devotional service is being inquired about by Maharaj Parikshit. Shukadeva Goswami gives him the answer. Devotional service is unmixed. You go through stages, that's the duty. I'm not going into detail. Devotional service that's unmixed with any other purpose. And that subject matter that one should hear about is Krishna! And things in relation to Krishna. So, that's the first three chapters. And lots of wonderful things I haven't detailed just now. So in the fourth chapter, hearing that the main subject matter that one should hear and chant and inquire about is Krishna, Maharaj Parikshit asks, can you tell me about how this material world comes into being? It's mundane, right? Scientists are looking into that. But it's very important. It happens to be the place where we are, the material world. And how does this material world have an unmistakable relation between the spiritual world and where we are now? What is our connection with the spiritual world here? And to have a proper understanding of this relationship allows us to then engage in devotional service here, to connect everything that's here with Krishna. It's the philosophical underpinning. Whole chapter on how important that question is, and Shukadeva Goswami just goes into orbit, appreciating Krishna, appreciating the question, and he ends the chapter saying, you know, the best way to explain this wonderful question is when Narada asked the same question to Brahma, specific succession. And so chapter 5 begins with Narada inquiring from his father, Lord Brahma. He asks some essential questions. I'm going to read them. chapter 5. My dear Father, please describe factually the symptoms of this manifest world. Symptoms of the manifest world. We're okay. I'm okay. Because this, we're going to go right into this. What is its background? What's the symptoms of this world? What is its background? What's did it come from the Big Bang, or did it come from, where did it come from? What's in the background? Did it evolve, or is it intelligent design? By the way, the Pope is this weekend having a big conference, and they're deciding whether it was the Big Bang or whether it was intelligent design. He's aligning himself with previous popes that, well, evolution's not so bad. There's obvious some evidence to support it. Now this pope is saying, intelligent design looks better. Anyway. This isn't, you know, Papal decree. This is Lord Brahma. What's in the background? How is it created? How is it conserved? And under whose control is all this being done? Then he asks some very pointed questions, like, is it you? Brahmaji, my dear father, are you not Svarat? Are you not independent, and from you all these energies come, just like a spider from his body? So much web comes and he moves around in the web and then withdraws that web back into his own body. Isn't that you? Or are you deriving your energy from another source? I see that you're meditating. Upon whom are you meditating? Is there some person beyond you? Are you not the Supreme Creator? Or is there someone who is the creator of you? Please tell me if you feel that I'm capable of understanding your message. Brahma answers in specific manner, and he describes, so what we then get in chapter 5, the picture that Krishna is the cause of all causes, and then there's cause, when he causes something, that cause becomes, he's the cause, the thing that's created becomes an effect, but that effect then becomes a cause of something else that becomes an effect, which then becomes a cause of something else that becomes an effect, which becomes a cause of something that's an effect, things that cause an effect. But Krishna remains in the position of the cause of all causes. He describes the Mahavishnu, Mahavishnu's glands, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. Then from Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, the Virat Rupa. And that's where it gets really, like, you're just waiting to get to the end of the section, so it gets too technical. But he describes the Virat Rupa, or Virat Purusha. And from the Virat Rupa, the various manifestations of creation come, the different planetary regions, from his foot to his, the top of his head. And so chapter 6 is where we are. Chapter 6 is the Purusha Sukta confirmed. What do we know about the Purusha Sukta? The Purusha Sukta prayers, one thing we know about them is they come from the Rig Veda. The Purusha Sukta prayers were recited by Lord Brahma and the demigods when they went to the shore of the milk ocean to request Lord Vishnu to appear in this world because Mother Earth was overburdened by the demoniac kings. And so that's how they addressed Lord Vishnu. Sukta. Sa. The Su. Ukta. Sukta. Very wonderful statements. Purusha. Sukta. So, the Srimad Bhagavatam is giving a commentary on the Rig Veda, the Purusha Sukta portion, right here in the second canto. Srimad Bhagavatam is a commentary on Gayatri Mantra. Srimad Bhagavatam is appreciated. It's explicitly said in other of the Puranas. This Bhagavat Purana gives a commentary on Gayatri Mantra, gives a commentary on Vedanta Sutra. Here it's giving a commentary on Purusha Sukta. In fact, chapter 6 is entitled Purusha Sukta Confirmed. Now, what else do we know about Purusha Sukta? The Vaishnavas like Purusha Sukta, and the impersonalists like Purusha Sukta. So, it needs commentary if it's something that can be appreciated by diverse personalities. And you see the Sanskrit for the first verse. Sahasra Sirsha Purusha Sahasraksha Sahasrapat. Very famous line. And if this microphone works, we'll see if it works. You're going to hear some brahmanas chanting Purusha Sukta. We're going to go through what the Purusha Sukta, just a few verses, what it says. So that when we go to the Srimad Bhagavatam and it expands on what Purusha Sukta says, you'll see the connection. The Supreme Lord, in the form of the universe, has 1,000 heads, 1,000 eyes, and 1,000 feet. For he contains all living entities, having pervaded the universe completely to give it existence. Being independent, he extended himself beyond it by 10 fingers. That's 2 hands. Purusha Sukta is their prayers to the Purusha avatars. The Purusha avatars mean Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, Kshiradakshaya Vishnu, and Karnadakshaya Vishnu. Those are the Purusha avatars. Purusha Sukta's prayers to Lord Vishnu. And Lord Vishnu expands this universe. He expands the universe as his universal form. So this universal form, as you see the picture on the right, has thousands of heads, 1,000 eyes, 1,000 feet. So impersonal is like this. Just imaginary. Little anecdotes. I met some people that actually are worshippers of the universal form. Kind of. I'll skip the, for lack of time, I won't embellish the story with the detail, but the person, I was visiting someplace and I went to my sannyas Vaishnava attire with tilak and so on. And there's a group of people, a teacher with a group of students. So the teacher pulled me to the side, showed me the universal form picture, and kind of whispered, "It's just imaginary." We teach our students to worship this form. But you're obviously a spiritual person, so let me tell you directly. It's just imaginary. It's to help these people that can't appreciate something subtle, to fix their minds on this form, but ultimately beyond the form. You got the rest of it, don't you? Is the formless Brahman. It was like, you know, I felt really yucky, but like somebody introducing a prostitute or something, you know. Behind the clothes, there's... So, out of respect to the person's position and not wanting to make a scene in the public, I didn't, you know, smash the man. But I let him know, Brahmano hi pratishtham, and that supreme Brahman, that effulgence of the Brahma Jyoti, the personality of Godhead, is the pratishtha of that. And just know that he is the supreme personality of Godhead. And you don't have to tell your students. Oh. The universal self advice in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there are two classes of impersonalists. Some directly worship the impersonal Brahman. Some worship this Virat Rupa. Now, Vaishnavas, it's right in Bhagavad Gita, the Virat Rupa is there. It's right in Rig Veda, it's right in the Bhagavatam. But there needs to be proper understanding. And you know what happens, that there isn't proper understanding. There's misunderstanding. You can go very swiftly in the wrong direction of misunderstanding. So it's very important to understand the relationship of this world with the Supreme Lord. And that's what Purusha Sutta is doing. So now... The universes, past, present, and future, are but manifestations of the Supreme Lord who extends himself as the Purusha. So, sometimes there's questions, here it is. This, you know, is Krishna an avatar of Vishnu, that question. Yes, Krishna is an avatar of Vishnu, and Vishnu has as his source the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. And both statements are true. Should I detail that, or is you all understood that? Krishna expands first as Balaram, his first expansion. Balaram then expands as the original Sankarshan. The Purusha forms of the Lord, the Purusha avatars, manifest. So those who worship Narayana, they appreciate that Lord Vishnu is the expansion of Narayana, and then Lord Vishnu has his expansions. Just as in the third chapter of the first canto, the expansions, the avatars of Vishnu are identified in Krishna's in that list. After the list, which isn't a comprehensive list, because the number of forms of the Lord are unlimited, The statement is there, Ete Chansa Kalapush Pungsa Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam, which says, of all these different forms of the Lord who are avatars of Vishnu, one is the source of them all, and in fact is the source of Vishnu, Swayam Bhagavan Krishna. Just like Krishna expands the material world, then he enters into it. That may sound like a contradiction, but it's not. Similarly, Krishna expands in various layers, various stages of expansion, Mahavishnu, or Krishna is within the heart. But Krishna as the Paramatma feature is within the heart. So, this Garbha Dakshaya Vishnu, who the demigods went to approach in the milk ocean, he agreed to appear. The prayers that were offered were the Purusha Sukta. In the Purusha Sukta, it says, this Lord Vishnu that the demigods went to approach, he is an expansion of the original personality of Godhead. And one of the verses that we're going to read is where it says the same thing, right from the Bhagavatam. He is the Lord of immortality. Take note of this because it's right in the Bhagavatam. Same. He is the Lord of immortality, but has manifested himself as the Purusha in the universe so that the jivas may enjoy material fruits. Vishnu performs the function on behalf of Krishna to serve the living entities, and that is to give them an opportunity to try to enjoy independently of Krishna, which they can't do, but to try at least. So he manifests the cosmic manifestation. That's the Purusha avatars. The Purusha avatar is an expansion of Krishna. Past, present, and future universes are manifestation of the Lord's powers. But the Lord himself is much greater. The material creation is but one quarter portion. You've heard this before, right? This is where it comes from. Ekapad and Tripad Vibhuti from Purusha Sukta. And it's mentioned in the Bhagavatam, confirmed. And the eternal nature of the spiritual sky exists in three quarters portion. The three quarters portion of the Lord transcended the material portion. The Lord in the one quarter portion, that's Vishnu, manifested the universe again as he had done repeatedly before. The Lord of the one quarter portion began the work of creation by going all around, taking the form of all animate and inanimate objects. The message of this Purusha Sukta verse is right in the Bhagavatam this morning's class. I'll point it out. So, where the verse says, both internally and externally, the Lord manifests and supports this world. So by his impersonal Brahma Jyoti and by the Virat Purusha. From that Lord, the Virat, or universe, was born. And in that, the Virat Purusha, Paramatma of the universe, was born. Having appeared, the Virat Purusha grew and produced the earth and the bodies of the jivas. I'm skipping some, but this then describes the four varnas and four ashrams in the pictures off the right side of the screen. From the face of the Virat Purusha came the Brahmanas, from the two arms, the Kshatriyas came into being, from the thighs of the Virat Purusha came the Vaishyas, and from his feet the Shudras were born. The moon was born from his mind, the sun was born from his two eyes, from his mouth were born Indra and Agni, and from his breath Vayu was born. So. Someone can press the power button, shut it off. Power button on the projector and turn the overhead lights up. Overhead lights on them. Somebody? The right side. No fans, just like, yeah, very good. Okay. It's 12 minutes before 9 and you haven't even gotten to the verses. That's Purusha, some of the verses of Purusha Sutta. And Bhagavatam has detail. And we're skipping the detail. The Bhagavatam has detailed a good deal of the information that's in these verses by expanding that and explaining it, or at least possessing it. So the elements come into being, the planets come into being, the demigods come into the whole creation from the potent and expanding his potency. And in this universal form. So, after the details and details and details, Brahma then changes gears a little bit. So we're beginning is chapter 6, text 13. 13 through 16 are grouped together. Sridhar Swami, in his commentary on these verses, says, what is now being presented is the inseparable nature of creation from God. Now, what he, in the purport, Prabhupada goes into the difference and non-difference of creation from God, Chinti Beda Beda Tattva philosophy of Lord Chaitanya. Here there's an emphasis on the non-difference part. When you hear emphasis on the non-difference part, don't get bewildered, because it's an explanation of part of the Achintya Veda Veda Tattva. It's the Aveda part. And there are some verses that emphasize the Veda part, and Lord Chaitanya's teachings simultaneously both. So Brahma says, beginning from me, down to you, and Bhava, or Lord Shiva, all the great sages who were born before you, the demigods, the demons, the nagas, and a whole long list, 40 different categories, including birds, beasts, trees, and everything that be, all are covered by the universal form of the Lord at all times. Namely, past, present, and future. Although he is transcendental to all of them, eternally existing in a form not exceeding 9 inches. So going back to the second chapter of the second canto, meditation on the form of the Lord in the heart was described by Shukadeva Goswami. Now he's making the connection between that form of the Lord in the heart and the universe. that exists enveloping or surrounding the living entity and the super soul, and all of that, all long, long, long verses, is always situated within the Virat Rupa, because sometimes Virat is manifest, sometimes not manifest. So when the creation is withdrawn, the ingredients of creation are withdrawn within the body of Mahavishnu, and the living entities are also in a dormant state, like seeds can be in a dormant state, resting within the body of Mahavishnu. And then again, the Virat is manifest, and then again it's sustained and withdrawn. The statement is, always the living entities, all of us, are covered by this Virat Rupa. And he who is making that arrangement does not exceed 9 inches. Now that Virat, the Paramatma that does not exceed 9 inches, or from the thumb and forefinger, that statement is made in the second chapter. That Paramatma is an expansion of Garbhadakshay Vishnu, who enters within the universe, who is an expansion of Mahavishnu, who expands the universe. And those three Vishnus are one entity. The number of universes are too many to count, but there's only one Garbhadakshay Vishnu, variously expanded. And he stands as Paramatma, and although there's Paramatma manifested everywhere, there's one Paramatma, the same Paramatma that's in the heart of every living being. And those three Purushas are one entity, all with the service as Purusha Sukta described, to provide the Jiva soul the opportunity to get involved in primitive activity. So the Bhagavatam is spending so much time in Bhagavad Gita. Don't waste your time with primitive activity. The platform of liberation is calling. Prabhupada starts the purport with a very, very intriguing sentence. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, by his partial representation, that's super soul, measuring not more than 9 inches as super soul, expands by his potential energy in the shape of the universal form, which includes everything manifested in different varieties of organic and inorganic materials. Sometimes, in fact, earlier it was described in the Bhagavatam that Garbhadakshay Vishnu expands the Virat Rupa. In the purport here, Prabhupada is saying that Paramatma expands Virat Rupa. So one of them is right and one of them is wrong, right? No. They're both right because it's one entity. They're both right, because it's one entity. There are different functions of that one entity, but it's one entity. So, usually it's described that the Garbhadakshay Vishnu extends the universal form, because he's the Lord of the universe, and he extends the universal form that he is the Lord of. But that Paramatma is the extension of Garbhadakshay Vishnu that enters within every atom of the universe. And so both statements are perfectly okay. And it says potential energy. So we know this from science class, right? There's potential energy. Potential and kinetic. potential energy. His potency, he stands, it's his, and he stands it. And that's what this Virat Rupa is. The manifested varieties of the universe are therefore not different from the Lord. Here Prabhupada is underscoring Sridhar Swami's commentary. We should understand the potent and the potency are not different. We're also to understand they're different. But that the energy comes from one source. There's an inseparable relationship between the creation and God. Because that's what the chapter is wanting us to understand. Just as golden ornaments of different shapes and forms are not different from the original stock reserve of gold, the gold ornament and the gold mine. The gold ornament is shaped in a particular way, sometimes this, sometimes that, sometimes that. It's derived from the gold mine, and they're qualitatively the same, quantitatively different. And there's different features over here in the golden ornaments. And you'll see the features in the gold mine. So, further into the purport, Prabhupada is just expressing this Achintya Veda Veda Tattva philosophy. He compares it to Bhagavad Gita 9, chapter 9, texts 4 and 5. Everything is within me and everything is outside of me. Behold my mystic opulence, everything is not within me. Again, Prabhupada restates, everything rests on the potency of Lord Sri Krishna. And still the Lord is different from and transcendental to all such identities. In the Vedic Purusha Sukta of the Rig Mantra, this is also confirmed. So we showed you directly in the Purusha Sukta mantras. It's there. He's independent. He manifests Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu does his function. He expands his potential energy so that the living entities can have some illusion, something to do. Too much to do, so they don't have any time for Krishna consciousness. So too much to do. Then Shukadeva Goswami calls upon a metaphor to help elucidate this further. He gives the metaphor of the sun and the sunshine. The sun illuminates both internally and externally by expanding its radiation. It illuminates because the sun itself is luminous. But the rays also extend and they illuminate other things by the potency of the light of the sun. Similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by expanding his universal form, expanding of his potential energy as this universal form, maintains everything in the creation, both internally and externally. So, internally, because everything rests upon him, and externally, because everything is resting upon his energies, both internally and externally. The sun and the rays of the sun, the Supreme Lord and his expansion of the universal form, everything, both internally and externally, is resting upon him, is maintained by him. Listen carefully to this beginning of the purport. It's even mystical, you have to listen very carefully. The universal form of the Lord or the impersonal feature of the Lord known as the Brahma Jyoti, is clearly explained here. And here Prabhupada is equating, not are, it's is. The universal form of the Lord, or in other words, the impersonal feature of the Lord, known as the Brahma Jyoti, is clearly explained here, and compared to the radiation of the sun. Now in the radiation of the sun, you don't find universal forms, or you don't find varieties of existence. You just rays of the sun. But because the rays of the sun give life, without the sun, where's the trees and where's the variety? It's being sustained by the energy of the sun. So there's variety. So the Virat Rupa is, the previous purport is saying the Virat Rupa is an expansion of the potential energy of Vishnu. Now over here, it's equating the Brahma Jyoti with the Virat Rupa. Mystical, huh? Did you catch that? It's real clear, right? The presentation is to understand how the varieties of material creation come into being from Lord Vishnu. From Vishnu also has his jyoti. He has his transcendental effulgence. He has his transcendental potencies. And he can transform those transcendental potencies as he likes to manifest this feature of creation which comes from him, he sustains it, and he withdraws it. And the energy of the energetic, as the rays of the sun are to the sun, the Brahma Jyoti is the basis and support, the internal basis and support of the Virat Rupa. And then the Virat Rupa is unfolded by the potential energies, which are maintained and supported by his spiritual potency. The sunshine may expand all over the universe, but the source of the sunshine, namely the sun planet or the deity known as Surya Narayana, is the basis of such radiation. Similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, is the basis of the impersonal Brahma Jyoti radiation, or the impersonal feature of the Lord. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 14:27. Right? What's going on here? We're getting a very clear, very simple, a very clear scriptural explanation of what often has people scratching their heads or just going off with a partial understanding and not getting the whole picture. Like, you know, a common thing that people, a thematic question that people ask is, how does something material come from something spiritual? God is all spiritual. How can, from the all spiritual God, can this thing come? There's different answers to that question. It doesn't. Or either this place is false and only God is real, or only this place is real and God is false. Because how do you... Because if it's real and there's so much suffering, another variety of the same question, there's so much suffering in this world, but God is all good and all perfect. How does suffering come from the all good and all perfect God? Variety of the same question. That's where there's only oneness. He's responsible for this, because he made it. And there's all this suffering going on. Shame on God. He must have made a mistake. That's one conclusion.
why bad things happen to good people. The conclusion of that book is God made a mistake. He's entitled to some mistake. We make mistakes. And he made a few in a place where people suffer. Anyway, the Bhagavad Gita doesn't have that conclusion. The Achintya Veda Veda Tattva philosophy is couched in the Purusha Sutta and the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam. And Lord Chaitanya discloses it. The energy of the sun sustains life in this universe. The energy of the sun comes from the sun planet, comes from Surya Narayan. Take it even one step further. The Bhagavatam being a commentary on Gayatri Mantra, in the 12th chapter of Srimad, 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, this is detailed. Some people think Gayatri Mantra is worship of the sun. Some people think Gayatri Mantra is worship of the sun god. Some people think Gayatri Mantra is worship of the impersonal Brahma-jyoti. Gayatri Mantra is worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If one gets this fundamental sambandh again down, you know, how does this material thing come from the spiritual being? It's subtle. If you don't understand it, keep chanting Hare Krishna. Then chant your Gayatri mantras when you receive it very diligently, and you'll be able to understand subtle things more easily. But the relationship of the material energies to the spiritual personality of Godhead is an important subject matter. And so there's some sections of the Bhagavatam dedicated to that. And it's important to understand it. Otherwise, you're just kind of going on with your eyes closed thinking, I hope it all works out. We're not just going on a primrose path of foolishness. But there's scriptural basis and support for engaging this illusion, this temporary manifestation of something that has no substance, in service to the Supreme Lord. Because it's the spirit of that offering and that's the critical issue, and the detachment from the illusory feature, but recognizing these are energies of the Supreme Lord. They are real energies. Krishna has declared that. Let us engage them appropriately in service to the Supreme Lord. When that spirit is accomplished, then one can understand this otherwise kind of mystical explanation. So the universal form of the Lord is the secondary imagination of the impersonal form of the Lord, but the primary form of the Lord is Lord Shyama Sundara, with two hands playing on his eternal flute. The Virat is the form of the Lord's potential energy, and it's sometimes manifest and sometimes not manifest. Upon the Lord's will, he manifests it, and upon his will, he withdraws it. Completely under his jurisdiction, but it's of another category of energy. It's his inferior energy of a temporary nature. At least the forms are of a temporary nature. The energy is his eternal energy. So could be from the previous chapter, cause of all causes, Shamsundar, or Govinda, Sarva Karana Karana. He's the cause of everything. And that which he's caused, at least the temporary material manifestation, it's resting upon the Brahma-jyoti, which is coming from the Supreme Lord Vishnu, and it's his energy which he manifests, maintains, and in course of time withdraws, and as the Purusha Sutta describes, again manifests, again maintains, again withdraws. So in material life, we're so caught up in the, you know, the moment of stuff that's happening. So distracted by the stuff that's happening that we forget our eternal nature. So, the illusory energy has done her job. We're just fascinated with all the stuff that's happening. Trying to enjoy the good, trying to minimize the miserable, and bluffing our way through existence, basically. Completely lost to our eternal nature. The purpose of understanding that mischief of the illusory energy is to put a hold on pursuing the illusion of trying to be the enjoyer of guru-devotee activity and turn our attention to the cause of all causes, Krishna. This, I'll end with this. That's what Shukadeva Goswami said in the first three chapters. The purpose of these chapters is not to get us lost again, but to see in the forest, to see the personality of Godhead, although he's not so visible to the mundane eye, especially the sense-gratifying eye. But he's visible to the devotee, because he's the basis and support of it all. To be continued. Any questions? For 12 after. No conjecture? Oh, you got one back there? Vikash?
When we see that the material energy is somewhere, and then the deviation is further, so by that we understand that we're capable of saving that.
Well, if I understood your question correctly, I'm looking out the window and seeing the trees of Gita Nagari, and we don't hear the peacocks making their noise, I guess they're hiding out. But you know, you can see and hear and smell. You know, there's the materialistic vision is to be the enjoyer. And if something doesn't suit me, I try to change it around so that I can enjoy it. Because that's what it stands for me to enjoy. And in that consciousness, one doesn't see Krishna, just sees, you know, an object to enjoy. In Krishna consciousness, one sees it in relation to Krishna. So there's a sentiment that might say like that, but the idea is to have scriptural basis, so we can see through the eyes of scripture and stay fixed in that vision, scripturally guided vision. Then when we connect the spirit of devotion with that scripturally guided vision, we can see Krishna. Initially, we understand, but ultimately see Krishna. And that's the difference. A little simply, but...
What is the difference between the universal form and
but while it's imaginary temporary, it's one of Krishna's forms. It's imaginary because it's temporary, but it's one of Krishna's forms. It is one of Krishna's forms. But now you see it, now you don't. Now you see it, now you don't. Now you see it. Wait a while. Now you don't. Temporary. Therefore illusory. But not false. It's one of Krishna's forms. So we should see it as it is. One of Krishna's forms. The form of the universe. not like the impersonalist teacher that says, it's not real at all. It's just a trick. It's the form. The energy is, this isn't a table, but we can say it's a table. It's earth, water, fire, air, and ether. That's what it is. Now it's at the table. So earth, water, fire, those real energies are manifest as the Dharadrupa. One of Krishna's forms. As he enters into everything organic and inorganic. Krishna's presence. In the form of his energy and within every atom. On that basis, we can respect and honor the table. Because it's one of Krishna's energies which he has entered into. And all the more so, the jiva souls. So we can see them as they are. That's the idea. The material energy, I thought I answered. He's material. Earth, water, fire, air, ether. It exists. It's his energy. And the universal form is the configuration of that energy. I was giving the example of a table and compared it to the universal form. Should we say the table doesn't exist? Temporarily it exists. But what is it? It's earth, water, fire, air, ether. You want to look at it through the eyes of scripture, that's what it is. Temporarily in the form of the table. What's the universal form? The relationship of the universal form with the elements? Same. It's Krishna's form. Temporary. But Krishna is eternal. How can he have a temporary form? The form of his material elements. Within a certain period of time. That's temporary. Time relative. And then sun manifests. Sorry.
Those who stretch apega, oneness, maya bodies.
Yes, you got it.
Because they're offensive and they only experience with them. On the other hand, there are those who may stretch the duality.
Yeah.
Thinking in particular, like Mahavishnu.
Yeah.
And many religions, I think the common idea that they are God and they were something different, but they put scope for devotional service.
Yeah.
So what's the lacking in that understanding of stretching duality, and what's the benefit for understanding the Chaitanya
Deva? Well, I spent a whole day discussing that in Vrindavan and PIHE. It's recorded, I think. And in Dasamula discussion, what we did was we went through, after going through Dasamuda, we went through how Dasamuda teaches Achintya Devita Tattva. We looked at Ramanuja's teachings and Madhvacharya's teachings and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings, those principal three. And the others, there's an emphasis on difference and there's an emphasis on oneness. Neither of them has a cogent explanation. There's something it doesn't answer.
And that's sort of what I'm asking, what's that something? Even in a practical way, what's the lacking of that kind of understanding?
Well, you know, in this audience, I can, if I was sitting in Udupi and having a discussion with the head pundit, I might discuss it a little differently. But in brief, in this audience, the connection between, just like Sridhar Swami's statement, that the connection between the creation and God is not clearly established by Dvaitavad. So then things can happen over here that are not under the jurisdiction of God because they're disconnected, they're beta. They're distinct. Now, it's a Vaishnava teaching because ultimately all things that exist have their foundation in the personality of Godhead. But so it's like what modern theology calls a theological conception of God. A monistic conception of God, where it's likened to a clock, where the clockmaker makes the clock, sets it up, winds it up, and has nothing further to do with it. There's no ongoing maintenance, it's just take it home and it's yours. Whereas another conception is not only God creates, but he's continuously involved with the maintenance of creation. So what's limiting is, so once the separateness is there, how do you justify devotional service? Because it's separated energy. Just engage in the internal energy. But how do you engage in the internal energy? How do you philosophically justify engaging in the internal energy? Or engaging in devotional service through the internal energy if you don't have touch with it? You have to use that which you're in touch with. The senses and the objects of the senses. And
so how does Madhvacharya justify it? I'm sorry, there's some reasoning.
I don't have the answer to that question. There must be. I don't have the answer to that question. Yes?
The first canto in the third chapter, toward the end, there are very strong statements that the Lord answers them and performs. It's magic. So, the way I understand it from your perspective, is just to look out and feel the reflection of the Lord's form.
Say it again.
That's those things that just to look out and feel the reflection of the Lord's form. What is the purpose of the statement?
Which statement?
In the first and the third chapter for the man, when after describing all the incarnations.
Yeah.
The question of Virat Purusha is pretty hard. At that time, the Virat Purusha is actually not upon the Lord, that's what it said.
Yeah, because so this is where you have to speak carefully and listen carefully. And, go back to the table. Does the table exist? The table exists. Does the universal form exist? The universal form exists. Is this ultimately what this is? Is it a table? It's earth, water, fire, air, ether. And before it was something else, and later it's going to be something else, now it's temporal, it's a table. And we're using it. It has the function. Table. Later, maybe, it's cold. It becomes something for the heater. Make us warm, another function. And before it was something that produced, flowers and fruits, because it was a tree. But now it's, so, is it a form, is the universal form a form of the Lord? Yes. Is it imaginary form? Yes. Why is it an imaginary form? It's a form of the Lord. It's a now you see it, now you don't. Before it was unmanifest in Pradhan. Where did it go? If that's a form of the Lord, so it's a temporary form, and on that basis, an imaginary form. Just like the table is not a table. But there it is. Is it my imagination? It's in a particular configuration now, and with that configuration, I'm using it. It's performing a function. Universal form does certain things. it manifests the illusion of existence. But when what it really is elements of the Supreme Lord in any particular configuration. I don't have a problem with saying with the two statements that may seem contradictory. Is it a form of the Lord? Yes. Is it imaginary? Yes. And because the form of the Lord is eternal. But is it a form of the Lord? It's a very special form of the Lord. A temporary form of the Lord. On that basis, imaginary.
But now we only think of the illusory. When Vaishnava says that this is so illusory, we can't think that the world is real, but our perception of what it is illusory.
Yes.
Because the world is not solid, but the conception of what we think it is illusory. Our imagination.
Yeah, the rope and the snake.
Yeah.
Ropes exist and snakes exist. If you think one is the other, you got a problem. It's an illusory conception of what the thing is. So what the thing is, it's a form of the Lord that is manifest by the Lord for some time as the universe. As the whole universe, as the table, as universal form, is temporary, it's illusory. Have breakfast. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Can regarding Prabhupada's question, can I understand in this way the two statements that one saying the Lord does not have a material form?
Yes.
Other saying the universal form is a form of the Lord.
Yeah.
Can are those two statements corresponding to two different perspectives, one of the conditioned soul, one of the liberated?
Well, I never thought of it that way.
But both can be correct at the same time.
Well, the statement is made from the perspective of the pure devotee. I mean, Prabhupada is making both statements. We know that the Lord's form is spiritual. I mean, imagine if we spent, you know, a chapter and a half discussing this topic. It could really get wear you out. So,
but as conditions to be
I'm sorry, my thoughts were on chapter 11 while you were speaking. Krishna shows Arjuna the universal form. It's a form. He saw it. The Bhagavatam is describing it. It's a form of the Lord. But I don't see what we have to, anyway. You know, go try to find that universal form. Krishna can show the universal form. It's one of his forms. And he can withdraw it. And that's on the battlefield, what to speak of, you know, before there's anything. He manifests the Virat Rupa. So, from a liberated soul's perspective, that if the speaker of the Purusha Sukta prayers and the writer of the Srimad Bhagavatam is a form. That it's temporary from the perspective of a liberated soul, the statement is also true as illusory. It's an illusory form. It's illusory, and it's a form. I have a problem. I don't know what the problem is. Anything else? Because, last question.
There's a little description of the north arm, the mountains by the bones and so forth.
Yeah, that's very clearly imagination. But what Arjuna saw was the universal form. It's not, you know, the hills were his sacks and bones, and the rivers were his veins, and the eyes, the moon and the sun were his eyes. That's in chapter one. What Arjuna saw was the universal form, which has a different description, doesn't it? And it's that description in chapter 11 is very much similar to the description we find in chapter 5 and the beginning parts of chapter 6 and in the Hiradrupa of the Purusha Sutta. That Hiradrupa portion of Purusha Sutta. It's a form. And there are various manifestations on the different parts of that universal form. This evening to be continued. Grantarashima Tagutam Ti Gopimanam Ti.